Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
The Super Bowl was almost 2 months ago, and I know we're a little bit gridiron groggy, but we're going to jumpstart that football side of your brain as we talk about the greatest number 22s in NFL history with Oz Davis, and it's coming up next.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. This is your host, Darren Hayes, and we're podcasting from the Pigpen in Western Pennsylvania to bring you the memories of the gridiron, one day at a time. So with Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff supplying us with the tunes, let's go no huddle through today's football history headlines.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, and we have our Football by Numbers bonus edition of the podcast. And tonight, we are going to discuss the Football by Numbers, the greatest number 22s in NFL history. And to join us tonight to help us in this endeavor, Oz Davis of the Truly the Goats podcast joins us once again. You heard him on the 21s. He was so popular. He's back by popular demand. Oz Davis, welcome to the Pigpen once again.
Great. I'm happy to talk number 22. This will be the another time that I like seeing 22 more than at the blackjack table.
Yeah, you've been on this program. I think you have the record.
It's the
now.
Fourth the one,
most fourth one, and we're gonna have to like get you a time card here in the pig pen to punch in on, I guess, because you're on the payroll now.
Well, you're still gonna put me in for number 80. I still want to be on for number 80, and I would love to be on for number 46 as well, because
I think we have you on for a bunch of them. I'll check a look at those numbers later.
Sure.
I know Joe Ziemba's on for a bunch too, so he's going to be running neck and neck with you here
I like the prospects of number 46 too, because I think when you name a defense after a player, a whole defensive scheme after one guy, I think that's I think you just give the 46 show to that one guy. You know? But I'd love to come on the show for that as well.
Well, okay, we'll take a look when we get done here.
Sure.
But we have the Pro Football Hall of Fame has given us a bunch of other numbers. A bunch of players that wore number 22. It's a plethora, and there are some great names. I'm going to name through them real quick here. We'll come back and discuss them. But we have Emmett Smith, Paul Krause, Roger Worley, Bobby Lane, Ed Reed, Frank Gadsky, George Blanda, Mike Haynes, Ty Law, James Lofton, Bob Hayes, and Mike Mahalski. Some great names on there. There's a few of them that, you know, it's a little bit questionable. They didn't wear the number 22 for a very long time. But we'll get to that. I mean, well, we could talk about that right now. We had, Ed Reed, they have him down for wearing it for one season. I think when we were talking earlier, you identified
half
it was only like seven
half
games
season.
Or
yeah.
something that he yeah. Ed wore the number for him. So yeah. Ty Law's another one that wore it for only one season. But he's in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And so same with James Lofton, only wore it for 1 year.
Yeah. Yeah. All awesome. All awesome. Ed Reed, of course, was a fundamental part of just those crazy great Baltimore Ravens defenses of the aughts, the early teens. Just a really dominant player. One of those guys, I talked about this last show, where you saw him play. Okay, so he makes top 10 lists like this. You know, you're just so impressed with the way he plays. He just, you know, again, impresses upon you. Lofton, another great one. Magical kind of player for Green Bay and also the Chargers. Am I right?
The Buffalo Bills, he played on a couple of those 80s games with Jim Kelly.
Sorry.
He might have played the Chargers. Let me take a look at that. Let me get our head stat guy here at the Pigskin Dispatch to go into that. Green Bay, the Raiders, and Buffalo.
Okay. Oh yeah, the Raiders. That's right. Yes,
and he did have at the end of his career, Philadelphia half a season, the Rams for half a season.
Yeah, so well, that's the thing about Reed, right? Is that would make a great trivia question: is what were the last two teams that he played for? And that was, do you know, without looking at the Pro Reference page? I mean, it was
say
both.
Say that again.
What were the last two teams Ed Reed played for?
Oh, God, I can only think of him in the purple and black of Baltimore.
In his last season, I guess that was 2013, he played for the Texans, and then he played the second half of the season for the Jets. And that's when he wore, you know, the number that he hadn't worn the rest of his career. So, again, like, don't necessarily like to talk about those last few seasons with another team, unless you're Tom Brady or Joe Montana, for that matter, who did pretty well with the Chiefs in his last couple of years. Ty Law, of course, maybe because there's so many good players here that we have to make that differential. And I can't say I don't care how many years he played with that uniform number, but I do want to say this about Ty Law. I would put forth perhaps a controversial opinion. I still think that Ty Law has the greatest play in Super Bowl history, to his credit. I think when he picked Sixth Warner and the stadium blew up and the camera started shaking, that was like the most exciting thing I'd ever seen in probably in pro football, but definitely in the Super Bowl. Am I wrong?
Well, I'm being a Steelers fan. I have at least one play that's bigger than that. I'd say James Harrison's interception of Warner in the Super Bowl, going 101 yards and you're out of gas and ends the half. I think that was the most dramatic play in
cool.
Super Bowl history. That was the most dramatic play I ever saw.
Was pretty cool. That was the biggest point flip in Super Bowl history. That's for
right.
Sure.
That was big for that game too.
Oh yeah, that was a 14 point flip right there. That was for
right,
that game.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Warner had some really magical years, especially with Greatest Show on Turf. But damn, he threw a lot of picks. He really did. It wasn't quite on Jamarius Winston level, but he was up there. In any case, not to go down the rabbit hole. Okay, well, you know, you started at the top of the list with some pretty unassailable guys. I mean, of course, these guys are going to make your list, right? I mean, Emmitt Smith, all-time yardage leader, of course, right? You know, what can you say?
He's a stud.
Yeah, what can you say? Paul Kraus, you know, he was the kind of guy. Roger Worley's another one. These were the kind of guys that my dad and his generation, like, these guys were teaching points, right? These guys were like, here's how to play safety. Here's how to play cornerback. Watch these guys, right? Kind of like how, for me, another guy like this was Brian Urlacher later on, right? You want to learn how to play middle linebacker? Watch this guy. Just watch him the whole game, right? And so for my dad, that was Kraus at his position. That was like, here, watch this guy play. That's how you play. And of course, he played for those Vikings teams. Kind of one of those perpetual contenders, but, you know, never could win the Super Bowl. He played in at least one Super Bowl, if not two, I believe, with those teams.
Yeah, I think you're right. He was elite. He might have been on a few of them there because
He played with them through the 70s, right? So, and that's when they were doing that. That's when they were losing four Super Bowls. It was in the 70s. So he probably had a few Super Bowl games in there. But, and then, you know, Worley's another one. Look at this guy. That's how you play, etc. So I think that, you know, of course, these three guys, you know, you have to have on the team. Now, in the last hour, I just wanted to put forth one more. In the last episode, we spent a lot more time probably than we should have talking about John Hadle. But, you know, here's Bobby, the blonde bomber, Lane, right? And he's playing in the chin strap 50s, right? And again, like, here's another great quarterback for the era before the quarterback, you know, is what it is now, before the pass happy offenses, before the West Coast offense, whatever you want to attribute it to. You know, he's playing in the conservative 50s and, you know, killer stats, right? So,
right
again, probably, you know, the best quarterback to wear number 22 I think those four guys are no-brainers.
Well, I'd like to bring up another one I think is a no-brainer. I think that's Bob Hayes.
Oh, yeah, sure.
He's got a great last name, so we got to mention him for that. But but he was just a stud of his time, you know.
Sure.
Dallas Cowboys, for most of his career, he finished up with the San Francisco 49ers, but we don't like to talk about that last year.
Yep, again.
But, you know, 371 receptions, 71 touchdowns in 132 games, you know, three Pro Bowls, two times All-Pro, you know, just a great player, known for some great speed at that position of wide receiver for the Cowboys, and couldn't be stopped.
Yeah, that was in the early days. That was in the early days of the pre-merger and then post-merger period, right? So the early days of the modern NFL, Hayes was a dominator.
Yeah, so I mean, I would say those five names that we mentioned, and you know, just to review them, but Smith, Krause, Worley, Lane, and Bob Hayes, I think are, in my book, they're probably five automatics into the top 10 because mm-hmm. they're just that substantial to the NFL's history.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, okay then. Speaking of, you know, important to the NFL history, I'm putting forth George Blanda. You know, now he's got only 4 years in the number, but geez. Okay, look, Blanda has got to make the all-time NFL team. Okay, he's got to be the starting place kicker, and maybe he's like the fourth string quarterback. Like, he's the guy that comes in after you take out Montana and Elway and Brady, right, and Peyton Manning. So he's the fifth string quarterback. Okay, but just based on the longevity alone, you know, when they talk about how old Tom Brady is and about how X number of players have played this long, X number of players have played this many games, Blanda is the guy that he gets compared to. Okay? Blanda right. was Brady before Brady. Now, okay, it could be said, yes, you know, Blanda stopped playing quarterback when he was like 35. But it could also be said that, hey, there's not too many guys that have the career of, I don't know, let's say not quite an Elway level, but I don't know, Warren Moon, let's say, has the career of Warren Moon and then has the career of an Adam Vinatieri. Okay, there's not too many players you could say that about. In fact, there's really one, and that's Blanda. So I'm putting Blanda on this team. All-time points leader as well. I say Blanda.
Think about this. Think about this way with Blanda. This is an amazing thing to think about. He's playing for George Halas in George Halas's heyday as a coach of the Bears, and then he's playing for John Madden in the 70s
right.
in his heyday. I mean, that right. from the 1949 all the way to 1975, and the AFL in between.
Right.
You know, you're right. That's an amazing career, and he really got his play at quarterback in the AFL with the Houston Oilers in 1960. Mm-hmm. He actually retired from the Bears. He was kind of ticked off at Halas, I think, because Halas wanted him to be a kicker and he wanted to be a quarterback. And he retired and was, you know, he had 12 seasons under his belt at that time. And, you know, the knocking on the door comes the Houston Oilers. Hey, we're starting a team. We need a quarterback.
Yeah.
Come on in.
Yeah.
And he played well.
Yeah.
Definitely played well.
Yeah, and then, I mean, basically, like, jump starts his career, right? He still had – he didn't even know it, but he still had, like, two-thirds of his career in front of him, which is insane.
You know? Right.
I mean, imagine if Michael Jordan had come out of retirement that time, and he's still playing now. That's basically, like, what Blanda did. It's crazy.
Right, you're
it's
right.
Crazy. It's crazy. It's crazy. So he's on this team. He's on this team.
Maybe 15 years from now, when Tom Brady is still playing,
same thing about Brady. Jeez, yeah, he becomes a kicker, right? He calls in Vinatieri, gets tips. You know? Calls in Doug Flutie, learns the drop kick. It's
great. I think Blanda should be at number six spot. So we got six names tied up, and we haven't even left. We haven't talked about non-Hall of Famers yet.
Well,
we've got some great players there, too.
Well, okay, I wanted to talk about this. You know, you send this list of prospective players, and then, you know, the only stat we have is the AV stat. But, you know, it gives some perspective, especially across positions. And, Jesus, in the top five, you've got Christian McCaffrey and Derrick Henry. You know, these guys have been in the league for 4 and 5 years, respectively, and they've already racked up like more AV points than dudes like Bobby Lane, who played, you know, what, 15 years. It's like, Jesus. I mean, okay, now Christian McCaffrey, his future may be in doubt because all good rumors have him going to Houston next season. So we'll see what comes of Christian McCaffrey, but. I mean, here's a guy who, you know, I talk extensively, I think, the last podcast about, you know, running a guy into the ground. But here's a guy who's catching and receiving for 1,000 yards. So this guy's career could go in any number of ways, even if he gets one of those disastrous career-changing injuries. Yeah, I mean, he could just become a straight-up wide receiver someday. Or maybe he'll just become a halfback. Or maybe he'll be a tight end. You know, he throws a block pretty well, you know. So McCaffrey, wow. I mean, you know, I'm one of these guys who truly the goats. My podcast is all about having a sense of perspective on history. But what McCaffrey's done in 4 seasons is tough to deny. And then there's Derrick Henry. You know, same deal. I keep waiting for this guy to fall off the Priest Holmes cliff. You know, but for 5 years, he's just been pounding that line, breaking away runs every once in a while, just dominating. In a way that has fantasy players taking running backs first again, you know? So it's like these two guys, I mean, you know, again, I don't like to call this stuff too early, but they might be here.
Yeah, that's true. And I think they're definitely worth mentioning, but maybe there might be a couple names we might have to come back to on there. I don't know
sure.
that we put them on there right now. We have another player that's playing right now. Jimmy Smith, who has had a nice long career, 10 years he's been wearing the number 21, and he's still going from what I understand, I believe still with Baltimore this coming year. He's played with them his whole career so far. But, you know, what a nice cornerback he has been for the Ravens, you know, on some great defenses.
Well, okay, here's the interesting thing about considering Jimmy Smith for this team. Okay, yeah. He's been with who else but the Ravens, you know, more great Ravens defenses, ho-hum, since 2011. So basically he's been, you know, a stud for the whole decade of the teens. But here's the thing. In the last 2 seasons, he's only started 10 games. He's only played in 20. Okay, so if you're thinking about putting him in a list like this, in a top 10 list like this, you have to consider that that may be it. You know, this may be the viable part of his career done. Are his
that's
stats
true.
To date good enough? Right. So,
and
just something to consider when you're going to put him on this list.
What do you think about a name like Matt Forte?
Yeah, see, Forte. Yeah, Forte. What a weird career, huh? Because you know, kind of broke out with Chicago, was supposed to be, you know, the next superstar, another fantasy football darling for a year or two, and then kind of dropped off the map when the Bears did. Then went to New York and kind of wasn't anything expected, and then surprise, like, you know, basically comeback player of the year. I don't know if they gave it to him, but kind of had that comeback season with the Jets. And then since then, kind of, is my memory correct here? I mean, is this what the stat page is telling you?
I don't see him being super impressive. He had 800 yards 1 year with the Jets.
Yeah.
And the other year he was 381. I mean, most of his yards was in a Chicago Bears uniform.
Yeah.
8 years with Chicago. He's had, you know, 97 or just under 9,800 yards total rushing in his whole career, 54 touchdowns in 146 games, 2 Pro Bowls. So,
yeah.
You know, didn't make an all pro. Didn't have those, you know, gigantic seasons, his highest season ever. Well, he had a 1,300-yard rushing
right.
season. That's not too shabby. As a rookie, he was 1,200 yards.
Yeah.
It seems like a good stats, bad team guy.
You know?
Yeah, that I guess you could say that.
Kind of like a fantasy player, you know. His teams are never great, but you know, he gets the numbers for you. So kind of on the fence about that one. Gatsky is in the Hall of Fame. He's got 6 years under his belt. I'm going to be honest with you. I did not do the research. I do not know much about this late 40s era of football. What can you tell me about Frank Gatsky? Great name. Well, the great Gatsky.
Well, right? He was a two-way player. So he played center and linebacker. Usually the centers were the linebackers. Four times was the AAFC champion with the Browns. He played with the Browns of the great Browns teams of the early 50s in the NFL as well. You know, finished up with Detroit. But we don't have a whole lot of statistics from that era from, you know, linemen and, you know, linebackers, really. But we do know he had 3 interceptions in his career. And basically those were in his first 2 years in the AAFC. They weren't NFL interceptions.
Right.
But, you know, made the Pro Bowl 1 year, 3 times as an All-Pro, and 4-time NFL champ. And like we said, the 4 AAFC championships that the Browns had. So
yeah, that's got to be it. That's got to be it. He's got to be part of that line that was protecting Otto Graham with the Browns, because that must be it. That must be how he's in the Hall of Fame, because, yeah, those Cleveland – again, wasn't there personally, not dating myself here, know it from the history books and NFL films. Those Cleveland Browns teams, of course, were dominant. I mean, a lot of people have said that one of the primary reasons why the NFL was concerned about the AAFC, the All-American Football Conference, one of the last great rogue football leagues, successful ones at least, was the Cleveland Browns. I mean, they were afraid of this one franchise. And when the NFL effectively bought them out, the Browns were one of 3 teams that they kept, the other two being the San Francisco 49ers, who still exist, and the Baltimore Colts, who sort of still exist, but that franchise opened and closed a couple of times before the modern Indianapolis Colts was established. So basically, I mean, they bought out the AAFC for the Cleveland Browns and for their first expansion into California, more or less.
That's very true. And he did block, I assume, for a little bit for the great Jim Brown near the end of his career.
Sure.
So, you know, somebody was blowing holes open for that big back that they get through there. And, you know, of course, Jim Brown made a lot of his own holes, too, from just his brute strength and skill set.
So, yeah, I guess just based on the reputation of those Cleveland Browns teams, I'd be willing to have Gatsky on this list here. I mean, it's one of my grand unifying theories of sports that the numbers always balance out. And the reason for a long drought like the Chicago Cubs is because it's actually an illusion. Because in the first 50 years of professional baseball, the Chicago Cubs were dominant. And I really honestly believe that the Browns' misfortunes since the 50s can in part be blamed on the fact that they were so dominant in the 50s and 60s. I mean, they were at a UCLA kind of level of dominance there. They were at the New York Yankees kind of level of dominance, winning championships in both the AAFC and the NFL when they joined that league for 10, 15 years. So, sorry, guys. I know it's not much consolation for fans of the Lions and the Browns, but your teams used to be dominant.
Well, so, I mean, there's also – we've got a few cornerbacks that had some longevity wearing number 21.
Okay.
You know, Clarence Scott is one of them. He wore that number for 13 seasons, played from 1971 to 1983, another Cleveland Brown in a different era.
Yeah.
But had a decent career, 186 games, 39 picks. You know, not bad there. Don't know that he makes that list, but definitely worth mentioning. A couple other ones. We have Asante Samuel. Mm. I guess you have to refer to him as Asante Samuel Sr. because his son's coming up probably through the draft this year. Mm-hmm. He'll be an NFL player next year. But Asante Samuel had 51 interceptions in 157 games. You know, that's about a pick every three games. That's a pretty good statistic there. Mm-hmm. And the other one is Nate Clements. Another great defensive back, from the Buffalo Bills, most famously, played a little bit with the 49ers and the Bengals. And he also had some good stats, 36 interceptions in 180 games. So, you know, probably Samuels is probably the top of the list of those three that we mentioned. Like I said, not sure that any of them make the list. You know, we've got seven spots filled up, three to go. But maybe an Asante Samuel is one to consider.
Yeah, Samuel, I kind of like. I kind of liked him coming into this conversation, but I'm looking at his numbers now. And yeah, I mean, you know, he was part of those great, the first wave of great Patriots teams in the aughts. You know, he's got the one season with 10 interceptions. And then, you know, he's not one of these guys who Belichick famously sells high on, and then, you know, the buyer was not wary enough and gets rooked. You know, it's not a situation like that at all, because he goes on to play for Philadelphia, makes a couple of all-pro teams, and, you know, has nine picks one year for them. So has seven picks in another year. Jeez, the year he goes to Atlanta in 2012 as a 31-year-old, he's got another five picks for 110 yards. So, you know, always an effective quarterback.
I forgot about one player before we put Samuels on that list. I forgot about a DB, and that's Dave Brown.
Sure.
And Dave Brown's got an interesting history. I mean, 1975, the Steelers draft him. You know, he's on the 75 Steelers, doesn't get much playing time. Expansion sets in. The Seattle Seahawks pick him up in the expansion draft off the Steelers, and all he does is have 62 interceptions in 216 games. All of his interceptions were with Seattle from 76 to 89. Nice long career, real nice DB there too. He may be a step ahead of even Samuels on.
Yeah, Dave Brown, he's a guy that you forget, right? Because just like, you know, I was talking about the St. Louis Cardinals the other day. You know, again, those early Seattle Seahawks teams, there were not many bright spots. You know, you had Steve Largent, you know, still one of the all-time great wide receivers. And then you had Brown on the defense. But again, you know, limited TV coverage. The Seahawks as an expansion team that played like one for the first 15 years of their existence, just did not get the coverage, and neither did Brown. So, yeah, actually, you're like really causing me to flash back here. So the price of that alone is worth putting Brown on this top 10.
Okay, I'm going to put him as our eighth player to be on that list. So we have two more to choose from. And there's a couple names of more modern era of running backs maybe worth mentioning. We have Fred Jackson and Carlos Rogers on that list. Mm. Both wore that number for nine seasons. Just some numbers from Jackson. You know, of course, he's most famously with the Buffalo Bills. Played one year with Seattle at the end of his career, but had 5,700 yards rushing, 30 touchdowns. You know, wasn't always a starter, but, you know, good solid running back there. Really did well with the Bills his last couple years with them. And then Carlos Rogers, another one, you know, you think of him as the San Francisco 49ers uniform. But before that, he played with Washington for 6 years.
Yes.
And, you know, decent career. He was a defensive back. I'm sorry. He wasn't a running back. And, but, you know, still is a real nice player for them. And end up having 17 interceptions in his career. But nowhere near what Brown and Samuels with their numbers, you know.
Yeah.
But worth mentioning because they were substantial players.
Yeah, I remember the days of Carlos Rogers for sure. But if we're getting down to that level, I think Samuel could get penciled in too at this point. Because again, like like I said in the last program, it's hard to dominate a game from a quarterback position, especially when you're getting thrown on like those Patriots were in the early aughts because of so much scoring. But Samuel could do that. He could do that. He could turn a game by himself. And, you know, he had some good playoff games, as I recall, as well. So Samuel, over 50 career interceptions. I'd have Samuel in there, sure. And they're all in the 22. So we can't debate that.
Okay. Right. Okay. So we have nine positions. Let's just review who we have on here so far. We have Emmett Smith, Paul Krause, George Worley, Bobby Lane, Frank Gadsky, George Blanda, Bob Hayes, Dave Brown, Asante Samuel. We have one left, and we've got a couple that we put on standby. I put three check marks by some people: Christian McCaffrey, Derrick Henry, and Jimmy Smith. But I think we were leaning away from Jimmy Smith a little bit because of what your point you made of him sort of dwindling down in his career, and that's sort of his numbers, numbers right now.
Yeah, we have to assume that his numbers are over. Are they good enough? Gee, at this point now, I almost feel like taking Samuel or Brown back off because I want McCaffrey and Henry both in there. I guess the question is okay, let's say we can't. Let's say we only have to put one in, McCaffrey or Henry. Okay? In your opinion, which of these guys has the brighter future in front of them? Like, which do you expect to be talking about in 10 years as the better, more productive, more long-lasting player of these two?
I they're both great backs, and I don't know if we'll still be talking about them strongly 10 years from now, because I think, like you said, they're really taking a beating.
It's a high burnout.
They're doing well, but taking that beating.
Yeah.
But I'm almost thinking that maybe we ought to drop Asante Samuel off and put those on there, or we pick one of those and leave Asante Samuel on. I think that's what we're sort of down to.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, McCaffrey has been injured a couple of times, so Henry just doesn't stop. He just keeps going. So I would be willing to say that if Henry turns in a couple more seasons at this level, that he'd make this team top 10 anyway. And I'm not that confident in McCaffrey, like, staying on the field for that long. And I'm really afraid, of course, for him, that they will have to trade him to Houston, because some of the word on the street suggests that. And to me, that makes sense. Because you wouldn't really need him on a team with Deshaun Watson. So, and that's a good trade piece. So I would, if gun to my head, Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry makes the 10th spot on this team.
And leave Asante Samuel on, go with Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
Stafford. He's sort of our 10B.
Yeah. He's like 11 with a bullet.
Another element of that is that if we don't have Derrick Henry on here, I'm going to have a certain Jeremy McFarland calling my phone the day this airs, saying, why is Derrick Henry not on there? He'll be beating the table on there. But I agree with you. I think that's probably the good call. Asante Samuel, Derrick Henry round out our top 10 greatest players wearing the number 22. Now, something I should have mentioned earlier. There was one name that was the Hall of Fame said that I did not put on that list, and that's Ernie Nevers. Mm. Now, Ernie Nevers, they said in Pro Football Hall of Fame, wore 22, but I went through everything I could find, explain why, you know, Ernie Nevers defined where he wore that number 22, and he's made it on some other lists.
Right, he made other numbers, so I don't feel too bad about leaving off Nevers.
Right, so I think we did it again. That was a tough one. That was a lot of good players on there and only 10 spots to fill, and I think we did it. Now, you are mentioned earlier, you know, the truly the GOATs has sort of been on a little bit of a hiatus. We know COVID is making a lot of things tough to do these days, and hopefully we're getting out of that pattern. But you got me a little bit excited, said that we may be seeing some Truly the Goats episodes coming up soon. So what are you working on there?
Well, I know you're one of my biggest fans. So, okay. I've got one coming out. Should be out anytime this week. So we're recording this on March 22. Going a little bit outside the lines here because of space. It doesn't happen that often where somebody comes to me and says, and it happens a lot where people go, hey, you should do an episode on. But it rarely comes, somebody comes to me and says, hey, I'm an expert on. and he should X and he she should be a goat. So I actually got handed one of those. I got handed the story of Johnny Bassett, who ends up being one of the influential figures in 20th/21st century North American sports, yet never played. Now some of you who are fans of certain defunct leagues may already know the name, so I won't give much more away than that. But that would be the next one. Now, I've got all sorts of stuff planned, but yeah, COVID has been wreaking havoc with my schedule. I know that I'll be doing one in the near future on a two-sport star of Gaelic football and hurling, which are traditional Irish sports, which for some reason do not get exported. So be talking more, I believe, about the sport than the actual sportsman in that particular episode. I also have a great podcast planned, if I can nail down a couple of guests for it, on a female semi-pro player, women's basketball player, who played in the so-called Black Fives era of the sport, which, of course, in the days of segregation, professional black players, both men and women, had to mostly do barnstorming tours, tournaments, things like that. So I would like to do that pretty soon, if I can nail down the guests. You know, I'm ready to roll on Greek Olympics. I'm ready to roll on chariot racing. If you know anybody who will guess for that, I'd love to do those episodes. I'm hoping to do an episode on rodeo, and I'm hoping to do an episode on secretariat in the near future as well.
That's a pretty full plate you got there.
Well, you know, I have 20 or so of these suckers planned, and the release dates keep getting rotated because COVID has made hell of a lot of people's schedules. It's tough to nail down people, and you know, it's tough to really get through to I have high hopes for a lot of these podcasts. I try and get on authors, I try and get on museum directors, I'm trying to get on, you know, I aim high. So, you know, these are busy people, and these are people who work with much larger media outlets than the Sports History Network is currently. So not always easy to do, but fingers crossed.
Okay. Well, we'll be looking forward to that. And we appreciate you coming on, joining us here again. I know you had another double session. You hit the 21s the other day, 22s now. And we really appreciate you being on, and hope to have you on and real soon in the future, because we know we got some numbers lined up for you.
Great. Love doing it. All I can say is sports history geeks forever.
Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. A special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.